The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there, this is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Company, like it always has been written. Just seems like forever. It's the last 15 years anyway. And because they've been serving the community since 1974, and they really know and love North Carolina. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we open the cover of a brand new issue of Our State magazine celebrating North Carolina. This for April 2022. Beautiful picture of a forest here, a man standing on the banks of a little stream that's meandering through a thick forest. And the theme this month is Paradise Found, the wild beauty of North Carolina's state parks. We'll see how many of them we can get to, but they're covering Umstead, Mount Mitchell, Carolina Beach, Gorges, Hanging Rock, Jones Lake, and more. We'll get to those next week after we go through the pictorial this week, but as you know, we start the first of every month with the From Elizabeth column by Elizabeth Hudson, our editor-in-chief of Our State magazine. A time to every purpose. It is time now for egg salad with a good mayonnaise, a little mustard, and a spoonful of sweet salad cubes. Mount Olive for me, please. And you certainly don't need a recipe for that. But it makes me happy that Mildred Council made sure to include one, easy enough for a light lunch, in her Mama Dips Family Cookbook. And there's one in the Greensboro Junior League's 1978 Out of Our League Cookbook, too. A classic hostess offering for an afternoon visit from a neighbor. You have time to make that pitcher of tea now, don't you? There's always time for a slice of lemon meringue pie. It is time now for early morning trips to the farmer's market for radishes and dandelion greens and turnips and asparagus, perfectly plump and heaped in mounds in the wooden bins. It is time to fill our jam jars, our vases, our buckets with bunches of apricot tulips, pink peonies, lavender sweet pea, delicate colors that ease us gently into this fresh new season. At home, my daffodils, fingerling size just a month ago, are finally full-legged and upright, emerged from their winter hibernation alive and awake. And seeing all of this, the outstretched arms of budding dogwoods, the green shoots of grass reaching for the sun, makes me feel alive and awake, too, nudged finally by the arrival of spring. We've been waiting all this time. It's time now for grand openings. Open all the windows to air out the house, to let the sound of birdsong, of wind chimes dangling from the eaves of porches, opening day at the baseball stadiums for the down east Wood Ducks, for the Durham Bulls, for the Asheville tourists. Open the cover on the backyard grill for barbecued chicken sticky with sauce. Open the shed to check the lawnmower. Open the cedar chest to store the winter blankets and shake out the log cabin patterned quilt. The Carolina Lily quilt. Heirlooms now, but their colors are remarkable after all this time. Still dazzle. Open the earth with the weeder, the digger, the tiller, to ready a spot for summer's squash and tomatoes for gold marigolds. It's the season to find the open fields, the pastures, the meadows with patches of clover, soft and cool on bare beet. My Aunt Joanna, an artist, had an amazing ability to find four-leaf clovers, which she'd pluck and hand to me to press between book pages, a gift to discover years later, long past the time I'd forgotten they were there. I think of pulling books from the shelves and opening randomly to see what treasures appear. An inscription in my grandmother's looping cursive, an underlined passage of a poem, a recipe notation from my dad, add more cocoa, or good, memories of time spent with people I've loved. And my heart opens with joy. And now it is time for me to help audio describe the photo essay, Natural Wonder. For those of you who cannot see or cannot see clearly enough to enjoy the full beauty of the page here with all of the pictures, this is a double leaf spread on the opening page, Natural Wonder. It says, our state parks can expand your mind and open your eyes from a 6,684-foot peak in the west to a shape-shifting sand dune in the east. They hold the best of what North Carolina has to offer: beauty, biodiversity, cultural function. Together they tell the story of the place that we call home. Written by Tom Earnhardt. The caption for this picture, before I describe it, reads, Mount Mitchell State Park protects 4,789 acres of Yancey County land. Established in 1915, it's the oldest state park in North Carolina and one of the oldest in the nation. So what do we see here? Well, the whole lower half of the picture is on a curved surface of concrete with a railing around it. There are three very large, flat concrete benches. And in the center, there is a gigantic compass with the compass points, N-E-W-S, on it, and a map of the state of North Carolina in the center, and a circle where we are standing on this circle showing the position of Mount Mitchell State Park. It is, if you think of North Carolina having a fairly straight line in from the coast, and then all of a sudden it drops off and comes down to sort of a foot at the left end, it's just below the drop-off there on that bumpy section where the border goes in and out of of Virginia. And there's a man standing at the railing over there, and he's looking out at a valley in the distance, and the valley is filled with clouds. So he's above the cloud level here, and off to the left we can see the clouds are rising and kind of coming in our direction, but he's looking out at the tops of clouds in the valley and a sun that is just setting. It's just right at that point we see the whole golden globe. We see a little bit of rays coming from it toward us, and then the horizon is all lit up in an orangey yellow color, and then as it goes up it kind of fades into a light blue, light purple color, etc. Beautiful day looking out from Mount Mitchell. In early August of 1956, I camped on Mount Mitchell with my best boyhood friend Don and two other pals. Immediately upon arrival, we raced to the summit and climbed the steps inside a rugged stone observation tower. Next to the tower, under a heap of stone, was the grave of Professor Elisha Mitchell, for whom the mountain was named. Elisha, perhaps, E-L-I-S-H-A. That magical night, while Don's father was wise enough to sleep in his car, his four intrepid explorers burned hot dogs, shivered in pup tents, and told each other Elisha ghost stories until sunrise. Before heading home the next day, we marveled at the wild forest of Christmas trees surrounding us and returned to the summit where, with unlimited visibility in every direction, the world appeared larger and greener than ever before. Back in the car, we kept reminding each other we just climbed North Carolina's highest mountain. We could not have been prouder as we compared our mountaineering success to that of Edmund Hillary, who had climbed Mount Everest in 1953. By that point, I had been to several North Carolina state parks with my family. Little did I know that more than 60 years later, I would have visited and photographed each of our 41 state parks from mountains to coast. It was, however, during that epic mid-50s camping trip to North Carolina's first state park, Mount Mitchell, that these magical lands became a permanent part of my DNA. Today, for me and for thousands of other Tar Heels who value their time in the natural world, the most important real estate in North Carolina is found in our state park system. Parks serve as classrooms, laboratories, and places of discovery. They are gymnasiums and yoga studios. For some of us, they are cathedrals and places of inspiration. Long before the pandemic, these same lands played a significant role in public and mental health for residents and visitors alike. For much of my adult life, North Carolina State Parks have also served as an office and a place to think clearly. I have not forgotten the important recreational components: hiking, camping, fishing, birding, horseback riding, kayaking, and some of the best rock climbing in Eastern America. State parks also preserve several of the most iconic and distinctive geological features in the Southeast: Pilot Mountain, Jockey's Ridge, Chimney Park, and the unmistakable profile of Grandfather Mountain. Finally, the 40-plus regional holdings of North Carolina's Parks and Recreation, whether designated as parks, recreation areas, natural areas, trails, or scenic rivers, are important repositories of biodiversity. The fauna and flora found within 250,000 acres, scattered from the ocean, Atlantic Ocean in the east to the 6,000-foot mountain ridgelines in the west, make these state-owned and managed lands among the foremost biological preserves in the temperate world. Within this system are maritime forests, salt marsh mazes, longleaf pine savannas, millennia-old bald cypress, towering stands of hickory and oak, and boreal forests reminiscent of those in southern Canada. Under forest canopies and fields of native wildflowers and grasses, and in pristine waters, live an immense collection of amphibians and reptiles. Almost 450 species of residents of seasonal birds, mammals, from bats to black bears, insects in every niche, and an array of carnivorous plants. Because of the pivotal role that state parks play in the preservation of our natural heritage and enhancing our quality of life, it should come as no surprise that the lands and facilities of North Carolina Parks and Recreation have hosted more than 22 million visitors in the past year. Recently, we've been introduced to the term critical infrastructure, referring to assets and services associated with quality of life, health, and functioning economy. Others define critical infrastructure as systems so vital that their destruction would have a detrimental effect on our security, health, and economy. Regardless of political persuasion, most of us agree that it's universally beneficial to have things like modern highways, safe bridges, and fast internet service. But don't those definitions of critical infrastructure apply directly to parks and natural spaces, also integral to quality of life, health, and a sound economy? There is one difference, however, between parklands and most other critical infrastructure. Roads, highways, airports, and bridges cannot be planned, engineered, or maintained by a few good citizens. It takes investment and oversight from governmental agencies at all levels. Parks and wild places are different. Many of our parks have origin stories that highlight the generosity, courage, and tenacity of individuals and citizen activists who made them a reality. And today, networks of local supporters known as friends groups assist park professionals by volunteering time, equipment, special funding, and the passion necessary to share park history. I have come to believe that parks are more than critical infrastructure. Within each of us, there is an innate connection to the land and its creatures. When we set aside tracts as state parks, we are making a covenant, a commitment acknowledging our connection to the natural world. During the pandemic, I found myself taking day trips to state parks near my home in Raleigh. As a frequent park visitor, I'm often asked to reveal which is the best or my favorite. Truth is, I long ago discovered that each park has a distinct personality. Each holds diverse ecosystems, unique landforms, important water features, and vital biodiversity. Taken together, they serve as a physical record of North Carolina's natural heritage. In the coming weeks, I will again visit a state park, and I know that no matter how many times I've been there, I'll learn something new. It's never too late for you, too, to begin an epic journey of discovery. The views from the state park you visit may not be as grand as the one I experienced in Mount Mitchell with three friends in 1956, but the possibilities for connecting with the natural world are just as great. Getting to know any state park can expand your world and make it greener than you ever imagined. And there are some photos associated with this introductory article till we get them to the main photos of the photo essay. The caption on the largest one here says, in 2009, a new observation deck was built atop Mount Mitchell. The 6,684-foot summit, the highest peak east of the Mississippi, provides a panoramic view of the Black Mountains. And I do believe that's what we were looking from at that opening picture. It's interesting. What we see here is in this aerial view, we see a mountain in front of us and then giving way to all of the clouds and lowlands in the distance and other mountains that rise up high and look very bare on the top and the clouds that are billowing over them. This is just all sorts of evergreen trees growing up here, but coming in from the right-hand side is a road which sweeps in, makes a 180-degree turn, and comes to a parking lot, and then you can walk up to the top where there's a raised building, or perhaps a story and a half high, and that's where we saw this cement surface and the big compass with the state of North Carolina map in the center of it. Overleaf, it has other pictures. It says, our state park system preserves some of the most iconic views in North Carolina, like Pilot Mountain in Surry County, alongside lesser-known gems like Goose Creek in Beaufort County. And there's a couple of pictures here of Goose Creek. I've been there. It's a pretty small park. There are some kids splashing in the water along the shore. What do you call that? That moss, that Spanish moss, I think it's called, hanging from the pine trees that are overlooking the water and overhanging the water. And then some close-ups of cat and nine tails and a small little looks like restroom or visitor's shed. But then Pilot Mountain up at the top is kind of like we saw before. At the peak, the mountain rises up with lots of evergreen trees, and then all of a sudden in the middle of it there's this rise of steep cliffs, and then they too are topped at the top with more trees. So you have to get up from the bottom to the top of that little cliff area if you want to really get a good view. Now we start the main pictorial, Carolina Beach State Park. At just 761 acres, Carolina State Beach Park is relatively small, but it contains multitudes. Few coastal destinations hold more variety in habitat and biodiversity. Elevations range from sea level to the summit of 50-foot sand dune called Sugarloaf. The park's mix of soil types is home to longleaf pine, turkey oak, live oak, and dwarf cypress. Its boggy areas give rise to a sampling of pitcher plants, bladderworts, that sounds awful, doesn't it, sundews, and Venus flytraps. In warmer months, you'll be treated to a mix of wildflowers usually found farther inland. Because of got interrupted by a voice that came from who knows where here. Because of its strategic location on the Cape Fear River, Carolina Beach State Park has a rich cultural history spanning American Indian occupancy with colonial period and the Civil War. For birders, myself included, it's just a great place to view large coastal species like egrets, pelicans, and ospreys. In forest thickets, keep an eye out for North America's most colorful bird, the magnificent painted bunting. The pictures here, there's really close-ups of the, not the pitcher plants, but the Venus flytraps, all open, waiting for someone to land on them. A very colorful bird standing on a little tree stump here. And a shore view taken over of a fallen tree limb with a lot of erosion on it. And it says at Carolina Beach State Park, licensed anglers can cast a line from the fishing deck. Elsewhere in the park, Venus flytraps can be seen growing along flytrap trail, and painted buntings flit through the wooded areas. So there's a kid fishing out here on this little fishing pier. There's some seagrass growing up along the shore. And remember, if you come across those Venus flytraps, you're not allowed to take them home. Visitors to the Outer Banks town of Nag's Head can experience the otherworldly beauty of Jockey's Ridge on foot, or, thanks to year-round winds, often blowing 10 to 15 miles an hour, you can view it via hang gliders, and both of those are pictured here on the page at Jockey's Ridge State Park. There is no more recognizable natural feature on the Outer Banks than Jockey's Ridge, but this coastal icon was almost lost to development in the 1970s. It took one brave person, Carolista Baum, standing in the way of construction equipment to prevent the destruction of this mountain of sand. Today, some celebrate Jockey's Ridge because it's the perfect place to watch a sunset and observe colorful hang gliders. Others appreciate its stark beauty and changing shape as the tallest living sand dune in eastern America, 80 to 100 feet high, depending on weather conditions. On its southern edge and western border, next to Roanoke Sound, you'll find wax myrtle, cedar, and live oak growing at the base of the dune. One October several years ago, something caught my eye on the side of the dune. As I got closer, I realized that it was a single spindly persimmon tree with perhaps a dozen orange fruits. A year later, the small tree had disappeared under shifting sands. So there's a view here of a large expanse of Jockey's Ridge with one lone person walking along, and in the distance, a line of houses along the ocean. And here comes a hang glider. His or her feet are hung up straight behind them, a sharp curve up toward the back of the hang glider, and the person's shadow can be seen on the dune that they are just clearing. And here we are at Jones Lake State Park. By the 1930s, a century of unsustainable forestry and farming practices had depleted the soil in Bladen County. During the Great Depression, much of the submarginal land around Jones and Salters Lakes was bought by the federal government, and a recreation center was created. In 1939, the site opened as North Carolina's first African-American state park. Until the 1960s, people of color from eastern North Carolina and the Piedmont used the 224-acre Jones Lake and adjoining lands to hold church picnics and family gatherings. Today, Jones Lake State Park, born out of the Great Depression and an area of segregation, has a beautiful visitor center and outdoor recreation opportunities for all North Carolinians. Around the park's two Carolina Bay lakes, visitors find a rich mix of bay forest and pocosin plants, fetterbush, sweet bay, and red bay. This combination of plant communities and water always guarantees an exciting mix of birds, insects, reptiles, and amphibians. There's just one tiny little picture here in a circle. It's showing what I believe is a cedar tree out on the water. You know, their roots build up into a big mass out there to help sustain them because they're in the water and not on land. It's got its branches reaching out, a little bit of Spanish moss on it. Next, we've got a couple of pictures of Merchant's Mill Pond State Park. Now, I've never heard of that myself. Like most North Carolina state parks, Merchant's Mill Pond is green and beguiling in the summer months, but in the winter you can see dramatic shapes of ancient trees that are normally hidden by foliage. Beginning in the 19th century, the mill pond became a center of commerce, powering a gristmill and a sawmill. These days, it's a hub of wildlife activity where you can see otters, bobcats, and the construction projects of resident beavers. Within the park, more than 200 species of birds have been identified, but the two that define Merchant's Mill Pond in summer are the northern parula and the prothonotary warbler. If you're lucky enough to find yourself at the mill pond at sunset, you might see bats dipping and diving for insects above the water. Several bat species live in the hollow trees that dominate the landscape. And finally, look for eyes just above the waterline. The pond is currently the northern limit of the habitat of the American alligator. caption on the picture says Merchants Mill Pond, located in northeastern North Carolina, is threaded with 11 miles of hiking trails. But the best way to experience the park is from the water. Bring your own canoe or kayak or rent one at the visitor center. Now, this aerial view shows a lot of trees growing in the water. It's like a swamp, but its surface is nice and even and blue, at least reflecting the blue sky here. But there's an awful lot of trees around there, so I don't think you want a motorboat around there. It has to be a lot of roots, but it would be fun taking a kayak or a canoe between all of these trees, which are their own little islands. And here are a couple of young women in a red canoe. It's an Old Town canoe from Old Town, Maine. I know them. I don't think they make wooden canoes anymore, but this looks like it might be one. And they are doing just what I was talking to you about. They are paddling between these giant trees, which have grown up huge root structures, like about 6 feet in diameter, maybe, and 10 feet tall, which really give extra support to the tree because they are in the water. And then we have Moro Mountain State Park within the Uwari Range. The tallest peak may be a high rock, almost 1,200 feet high, but the most famous is Moro Mountain. Moro Mountain State Park is one of our organic parks, having come about through the efforts of local citizens. In 1920, James McKnight Moro's donated land, including what's now called Moro Mountain, and additional gifts by Stanley County residents eventually resulted in the creation of a state park in 1939. Many of the facilities were built or improved by the Civilian Conservation Corps during the Great Depression. Yet human activity on this land started long before that. Moro Mountain was a source of stone called rhyolite, a fine-grained volcanic rock used by American Indians to produce projectile points and cutting tools. Archaeologists have studied the quarry sites in the area that were in use for 10,000 years before the arrival of Europeans. Not many state park sites have been in use for 11 millennia. Just a tiny little picture of a view from an area. Very quickly, Raven Rock State Park. This park marks the end of the Piedmont and the beginning of the coastal plain. Prior to the Civil War, locks and dams were built to facilitate river traffic on Cape Fear. An enormous rock rising almost 150 feet above sea level was a significant landmark for river pilots until those locks and dams were destroyed by floodwaters during a hurricane in 1859. Today, that natural feature is the centerpiece of Raven Rock State Park. The desire of local residents to preserve the rock formation helped create the park in 1969. An initial purchase of 220 acres has now grown to more than 4,600 acres. It preserves the best of the Piedmont and the coastal plains. Spectacular wildflowers and an array of reptiles, amphibians, and birds, both resident and seasonal, located on Harnett County, just southwest of Raleigh, Raven's Rock remains the major natural landmark on the Cape Fear and is protected forever in a great North Carolina state park. What a mammoth rock these hikers are going by with their dogs. That's terrific. Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it. You'll join us again next time to listen to more. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.